It Seems to Us, it's called. It Seems to the Michigan AFL-CIO. What's your arrangement with the Free Press on that?
Well, we have a special advertisement rate which they give to regular subscribers or regular advertisers. It may be fine for commercial organizations, but since we're not a profit-making one and we have a very modest income and budget, it's kind of high for us. But we think that it's a good way to communicate not only with our membership, but also with the general public. And without being paranoid about it, since we think there are many misconceptions and about the labor movement, and there's a lot of ignorance about this very important institution in our midst that's been on the scene for a long period of time, that this is just one way in which we try to break through. There are a lot of other ways, and we're working at them.
Mm-hmm. One thing about your column that's kind of nice is you have a little address that they can send their thoughts and their reactions to your column, too. Have you gotten much reaction from people?
Yes, pleasantly, and we like to do that, of course, just to see, indeed, if people are reading it and they're watching it. We offered to send a legislative directory with the names of the congressional delegation, the state house and senate, and indeed we got hundreds of requests for that, so that we're very pleased to see that people are watching them, and there isn't a week that goes by that we do not get some inquiries or some comments
mm-hmm.
that kind people send in.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always so kind or nice, but on the whole we're very pleased.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like a good investment of the union's money to buy that.
Yes, space. I think it's an excellent investment.
And how much is it? You mind telling us?
What does it cost?
Yeah, each week for that column.
It's about $1,000 a week.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a rough figure. It's certainly the ballpark figure.
Okay. 355-WKAR is our phone number if you have a question or comment on organized labor in 1984 or organized labor in politics. Sam Fishman is with us today. Good morning. You're on Morning Edition. Phone in.
Yes, I was listening to your program on my car radio. I had a comment and also a question for Mr. Fishman,
mm-hmm.
and I'll hang up then after I've stated the question. I've been a member of the Democratic Party for many years, and I was very distressed over the action of the UAW at the State Democratic Convention last weekend with respect to the MSU Board of Trustees. The UAW, under Mr. Fishman's leadership, joined the governor office in efforts to unseat Trustee Blanche Martin over his vote on the Mackey's continuation as president of MSU. I just wanted to say that I feel Dr. Martin has been a loyal to MSU for 16 years and has acted in their best interests, and I feel that many members of the MSU faculty are also supportive of Dr. Martin's voting record, and I feel the UAW should have obtained input from the faculty and those close to MSU rather than taking orders from the governor's office. The question I had was whether MSU will be able to remain constitutionally autonomous when conceivably five board members have been Blanchard appointments, and two of the board members who resigned during the last year took appointments for Governor Blanchard and continue to be active in policy making of the board. So I'll hang up and listen for your comments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess she's got to hop back in her car first.
Yeah, well, actually, several things were said prior to asking the question. Let me just make a few general comments about the long question. For one, there's a lot of confusion and mistaken impressions about the thing. It's not a case that Governor Blanchard or the UAW, I happen to be president of the Michigan AFL-CIO now, and it is that body that makes the decisions, as it did, you know, on that occasion. It wasn't because Governor Blanchard or anybody else laid down a dictate that somebody has to be purged.
Why has that been so widely reported then by people like Hugh McDermott in the Free Press, and why is that the general impression of what happened at the convention?
Well, I would say one general reason that you get that kind of reporting is because they like to explain events in that way without taking the trouble to find out and dig deeper, and it kind of explains their own prejudices about the labor movement's involvement in politics. If you take stories about the labor movement's involvement in politics, whether it be the MSU situation that the lady asked about, or what most people say or ask outside the labor movement, it's usually a negative that the labor movement is acting with great power undemocratically and in the narrow self-interest of the people themselves. They are painted the leadership, which is an elected one, and it's about the most democratic institution of any in the country, but they're all being pictured as big, heavy boss types of some particular kind or another, usually with a lot of negatives that go with it. You would never see George Meany, the former longtime head of the National AFL-CIO, being written about or described without pointing out that he was a cigar smoker. Cigar-stomping, rough, crusty, old George Meany, you know, this sort of thing. Well, most union people don't smoke cigars if they're elected to union offices.
But union bosses do, don't they?
Exactly. You got it, you see. In this particular case, let me briefly make some...
Please address the MSU situation.
Let me just say this. I think there is an attitude on the part of many people that get elected to office, whether they be university boards or other boards, that once they're elected, they have almost lifetime tenure, and if anybody questions it, it's for bad reasons. I think in our democratic society and structure and system, indeed, that we always should be, in a sense, putting everybody that is a candidate that's running for the first time or somebody who's held office, putting them to the task of explaining and justifying and looking into the role and contribution that they make in a given elected or appointed responsibility that they may have. Some people act as if, how dare you remove a person who's been in office for 16 years? Well, I would tell you that fact by itself is good reason why I want to take a look at people who've been in office that long period of time.
We'll specifically respond to the idea that Blanche was removed because he voted against Mackey, let's say.
Well, I can tell you that that certainly was never raised in any discussion, and that fact by itself cut absolutely no ice with anybody in the labor movement. And from discussions that I know, because I spoke to Governor Blanchard about it, he never once mentioned that that was his objection. The other comment that I want to make goes to university professors here being very supportive of Blanche Martin. Like everything else, there are some who are not. Well, let me say that if the academic body wanted to have input into this decision, it was a very simple way in which they could have done so. If they were active in the Democratic Party or delegates to the convention, they could have participated in that. This was a decision, and it's structured into our law, that political parties meet in August to fill out their slate. Now, there are certain things the active Democratic delegates that come to a convention take into account. How responsible a person has been as far as we view responsibility.
How democratic has that person been?
Well, not with a big D, but also sometimes with a small D. And I personally feel that Blanche Martin, like any number of other people that get elected to office, after being in office for a long period of time, kind of forget who their constituencies are, or who nominated them, or who elected them, and why they did. And at the point they get elected to an office with a party nomination, that it's because they represent a political philosophy. And when that kind of keeps getting veered or strayed from too frequently in different ways, a lot of people become pretty unhappy.
Sounds like you're saying that Blanche Martin wasn't towing the party line enough and you needed somebody in there who would.
Well, yes, but I would put it differently, because towing the party line gives one the impression that there's a line that party bosses hand out, and if you don't vote the way they say so, they crack the whip and they get rid of you. What's involved simply is that there is a mainstream Democratic Party philosophy in this state, and I think it's a good one. I think it's one that's in the best interest of most of the people, and it's a progressive one. And if people begin to stray and look out for other kinds of interests away from that and forget what it means. And it means concerns of students. It means concerns for many things, and sometimes that gets lost on the part of people that hold office for long periods of time.
Okay, I want to get to the phones now. 355-WKAR is our number. But very quickly, the woman did raise a question about the constitutionality or the constitution of the board. So many now will be Blanchard appointees. Is that going to be any problem?
I'm not sure of the constitutionality of that. I assume it is not a legal problem. And all that I can say is the lady or the woman that called ought to get squared away with the newspaper editorials that in the last week have been arguing, indeed, the governor should make all these appointments so that there are some people who feel, heck, this is the way it ought to be anyway.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, you're on Morning Edition, phone in.
Good morning.
Hi.
On the news yesterday and today, we've heard that the Teamsters Union has endorsed the Reagan-Bush ticket. Let's see. Without meaning to slander anyone, I think it's reasonable to say that the Teamsters Union has a somewhat less than savory reputation. Whether it's deserved or not, it's generally felt that the Teamsters Union, is, or at least the leadership of the Teamsters Union, that they're involved with criminal activity. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but the fact remains people think it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of surprising to me to hear Vice President Bush saying that he was proud to accept the endorsement of the Teamsters Union. I'm wondering if we are going to be hearing the same kinds of screaming and yelling about the Republicans being tainted by connections to organized crime that we have been hearing about Geraldine Ferraro's husband being maybe somehow connected with organized crime. Does it work both ways? Do the Republicans get it the same way the Democrats have been getting it?
No, if you're asking for consistency in life, you don't always get it that way. It doesn't work that way. As for the Teamsters, I hate to generalize and stereotype because I think whenever anyone does it, it's fallacious and wrong, and I normally do not engage in that. Let me just say that many of the Teamster union leadership, elected union leadership that I've met over the years, and it's pretty much been limited to Michigan, in many Teamster rank and filers are excellent trade unionists, and we work together. I can truthfully say, and that shouldn't surprise anybody, that there are many Teamster union leaders who are elected to office in the different locals throughout the state who've been telling me that their executive board may endorse Ronald Reagan, but that's not where they are and that's not where they believe their membership's going to be. As for what's involved in the Teamster and criminal elements, let me simply say this. The National AFL-CIO has a code of ethics, and we think that's important. Because when you consider what the labor movement's all about, and since we believe that means have a relationship to ends, indeed we think that the labor movement has to be cleaner than Caesar's wife in many ways, because we are a public institution, and we function with the money of our members who work hard to pay for it. It's their union, and most union leaders feel very strongly about the fact that unions are a democratic institution. And we think, indeed, they're the most democratic institution pretty much in society.
But not the Teamsters. The Teamsters aren't
democratically representative, like
your union.
Well, what I was going to say was that the Teamsters Union is not affiliated to the National AFL-CIO because they have not been able to meet, nor have they been desirous of attempting to meet, the high ethical standards and conditions that we, in effect, have within our Constitution and Charter of the National AFL-CIO. They've been out of the AFL-CIO for a number of years.
And is that why, then, they went for Reagan, or why are you saying that they endorse Reagan while the rest of the labor movement is
Address myself to that one. I simply try to put something in perspective. As for why they endorsed Reagan, that doesn't surprise me because as many people who have been close to this are aware of, they supported Ronald Reagan. In fact, I think they supported or endorsed every Republican president in more than a decade now. That's not unusual. I also think that there's an attitude that I've seen around the Teamsters Union that I disagree with, but it's there. There are some unions and people who do not represent unions themselves or other institutions who work on the assumption that we're going to go with a winner, and if Ronald Reagan looks like he's going to win, maybe we ought to be with him because he can help us out in different ways in the event we ever get in any trouble.
Okay, let me ask you this. The woman also said that George Bush said he was proud to accept the Teamsters endorsement. Do you think Walter Mondale would have been proud to accept the Teamsters endorsement? It is the biggest labor union in the country.
Well, I don't think size by itself determines what an organization is like and how proud you are to associate with it. All that I can tell you, and this is just a statement of fact, and it's unfortunate, that the past number of presidents of the National Teamsters Union have ended up in jail or been made to resign, or unfortunate deaths have come to them with the suspicion that it's a result of some criminal element in or around that particular union.
Coincidence, you're implying.
And all that I'm saying is that doesn't add up to a good situation.
Okay, so you don't think that Mondale would have even wanted the endorsement of the Teamsters?
Well, I don't think it's ever been discussed, so that it's hard for me to ever to say. I don't know what would be in his mind at all in the event the Teamsters were to have made that move.
Okay. 355-WKAR is our number. We're talking with Sam Fishman today, president of the Michigan AFL-CIO. He's also a member of the executive committee of the Democratic National Committee. Good morning. You're on the air.
Morning. I'd like to ask my question, Mr. Fishman, a two-tiered one, and then I'll hang up and listen. First one would be, since in the Lansing metro area, the largest employer, perhaps outside of Oldsmobile, is the state government, what Mr. Fishman's feelings are, where currently the majority of state employees at this point, at least, are represented by an independent association not affiliated with the AFL-CIO. And secondly, if you'd care to comment on the effects that the and perhaps causes that the current National Labor Relations Board has had on the labor movement and specifically Mr. Reagan's appointees. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call. First on the state employees.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'm not intimately associated or very knowledgeable about the Michigan State Employees Association. I know it. It's an independent organization. My impression, which isn't firsthand, I want to preface it, but from what I believe and know about it, I do not think they provide very effective representation for their membership. I'm referring to the fact that most recently when a contract was supposed to be open, they failed to go ahead and do the necessary paperwork that gives you an opportunity to open negotiations. And through that era, I think the membership lost an opportunity to have negotiations on concerns that they have at this particular time. I also say that because I know, and I can only, and I'd rather only discuss that which is factual and to my knowledge, that their leadership has been changed. And without making judgment that the new leadership is a better leadership, since I know neither one of them, the old or the new one, it certainly signifies the fact that the membership was not happy with the old member, with the old leadership, and hopefully, of course, by voting in a new one, they hope to get a more effective leadership that will do the job. I personally feel that workers are much better represented, and this is one of the experiences that I think are so obvious to the UAW. They're much better represented if they're part of the labor movement as a whole, and that's the AFL-CIO. As strong as a group of workers may be, you can always be a lot stronger if you're part of a united labor movement, and you not only add to the strength of the total, you get a lot of strength in return. That's one of the factors. As for the NLRB question, all that I can tell you is that I think that the appointments of the present administration, that you're not going to get impartial, fair action and impartial fair decision making from a group of people who come out of the National Right to Work Committee and come out of Amway Corporation and have a long history of being anti-labor from Dotson on down, who's the new chairman of that body. You're not going to get the kind of even-handed, honest, fair decision making from a body that's supposed to be in place to do that as far as the labor movement is concerned.